I'm Marty Moscoe-Wayne. Welcome back to Radio Times. Steven Spielberg's film Lincoln, starring Daniel Day-Lewis, is set in 1865 as the president works to end the Civil War and pass the 13th Amendment ending slavery in the United States. Here's a scene from the film where Pennsylvania Representative Thaddeus Stevens, played by Tommy Lee Jones, who just got nominated for an Oscar for Best Supporting Actor, uses his power of oratory and persuasion to pressure the U.S. House of Representatives to pass the amendment. He's addressing Representative George Pendleton, Democrat from Ohio.
How can I hold that all men are created equal when here before me stands stinking the moral carcass of the gentleman from Ohio? Proof that some men are inferior, endowed by their maker with dim wits, impermeable to reason, with cold, pallid slime in their veins instead of hot red blood. You are more reptile than man, George. So low and flat that the foot of man is incapable of crushing you.
How dare you?
Thaddeus Stevens plays an important role in this film, but how about in history? Who was Thaddeus Stevens? Why was he such an ardent abolitionist? How did he influence Lincoln, and what's his legacy? We begin our conversation with Steve Anderson. He's an actor and storyteller based in central Pennsylvania, is an interpreter of Thaddeus Stevens, performed at venues across the state. Steve Anderson's website is greattaleslive.com, and nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Oh, Anderson. Wonderful opportunity to speak with you, Marty.
Indeed, and to talk about Thaddeus Stevens. Let's begin with Tommy Lee Jones' portrayal of Thaddeus Stevens in the movie Lincoln. What was your response to that?
Well, I certainly can't disagree with his nomination. It was an amazing portrayal. As we just heard, they definitely captured Thaddeus Stevens' tongue. He had a very biting kind of wit. One thing that did bother me a little bit is that they didn't really establish clearly that Thaddeus Stevens had more going for him in Congress than just his tongue. He sort of comes across in the movie as, you know, the grouchy guy over on the side, as opposed to someone with an actual political position. He was the chairman of the Committee of Ways and Means throughout the Civil War. He's the one who had to figure out how to pay for the Civil War.
And a very important position then and now. Let me go back to your portrayal of Thaddeus Stevens. What kind of research, what kind of background have you drawn on for your portrayal of this person?
Okay, well, I like to tell people I'm an actor-storyteller. I'm not a historian. I have tremendous respect for the people who spend years in grad school and years in the archives earning the title of historian. I stand on their shoulders. So I started with the biographies, got the basic story, and then as I was reading more biographies, started to realize how much our understanding of Stevens has changed over time. And then from there, started looking more specifically at some of the particular episodes in his life, started to look into his papers, into his records, into some of the records of some of his major speeches. And when I'm giving my performances, I'd like to include some of his actual words.
And he was, as you have said, and as we are learning, he was quite an eloquent and passionate speaker. Talk to us a bit about, I guess, his early roots. He was born in Vermont and then ended up living in Pennsylvania. What do we know about his early life?
Well, he was born in a tiny little place called Danville, Vermont, one of those farms that's more rocks and stones than crops. Born with a club foot, a twisted foot that never healed. He described himself as a cripple. When he was 12 years old, his father left. His mother, though, insisted that he would have an education, moved the family to Peacham, Vermont, so he could attend the Peacham Academy. And then from there, he continued on to Dartmouth and to Burlington College, today the University of Vermont. And then in 1814, followed some of his classmates here to Pennsylvania in search of work.
In fact, ended up first in, was it Gettysburg and then in Lancaster?
Well, 2 years in York as a school teacher, and then Gettysburg for 25 years, and 25 more in Lancaster. He was a school teacher in York. He was a lawyer for 25 years in Gettysburg and 25 in Lancaster.
And where did his hatred of slavery come from?
Well, the way I see it, the turning point in his life comes just a couple years after he opens his law office in Gettysburg. At first, he'll take any kind of case he can get. And then around 1820, an old friend asks for some help, asks him to sit second chair in a case he's arguing. A young woman, Charity Butler, is suing for her freedom and the freedom of her children. And Thaddeus Stevens' friend is representing the slave owner who wanted her back. He owed the man a favor. He'd never really, as far as I can tell, thought very deeply about slavery at that point. And so he took the case. And he pursued the case. He won the case in the state Supreme Court. And watched that young woman and her children being led back into slavery because he had won his case. And made up his mind he would never take that side in a case like that ever again. And he never did. Instead, whenever someone would escape from slavery and come up into Pennsylvania and need legal help, he was always willing to take their case, whether they can pay him a dime for it or not. His neighbors, years later, looking back, said that they couldn't remember him ever having lost even one of those cases. Always seemed to find some way to help.
That's interesting, and quite a powerful story. Is there a question about whether he was involved in the Underground Railroad in Pennsylvania or not, or do we know the answer to that? Of course, as an Underground Railroad, you might not know the answer to that.
Well, a lot of people have thought for a long time that he was. We know that he was certainly a friend and an ally of people who were. Some of the strongest evidence came out about 10 years ago now. They were doing an archaeological dig out at his home in Lancaster. He had his house, and right next door a tavern that he owned, and they dug down underneath the courtyard in between and found a cistern, big water tank, except it had no signs of ever having had water in it. Instead, there was a tunnel that led from the basement of the tavern into the water cistern. There was an air shaft up above. There were artifacts inside that seemed to suggest that people had hidden there at some point.
That's intriguing.
So there's certainly enough evidence to convince a lot of people. I can't point to, a smoking gun specifically. We know that he did help some fugitives along the way. Whether he was specifically officially involved with the Underground Railroad per se or just helping on his own.
Time will tell.
Work that still needs to be done.
Indeed. Help us, and I know that this is also a question where there might not be a definitive answer, but his relationship with his housekeeper, again, going back to the movie, we see them clearly as a couple.
Yeah.
We see them in bed together. He brings home the 13th Amendment to show her that the president has signed it. How do you see, or what do you know about their relationship?
Okay. Well, first of all, her name was Lydia Hamilton Smith. And one thing that I like to make sure that people understand is that when we say housekeeper, that was the 19th century term. It did not mean what we mean by housekeeper. Today we tend to mean, the person who cleans up.
Right.
Back then, the housekeeper was the manager of the estate, the chief of staff, the person who kept the house. We know that she worked for Stevens for 20, 25 years. We know that they were good friends. We know that she was an advisor, a confidant. We know that he helped her raise her two sons, that she helped him to raise his two nephews after his brother's death. There's a long tradition of arguing back and forth about whether the relationship went beyond that, whether it was romantic or not.
Again, another intriguing story, and we should say she was African-American, which is why it makes it a very interesting relationship. We're going to be talking with some historians about the 13th Amendment and what Thaddeus Stevens did once he got to Congress, but he was in the state legislature in Pennsylvania and seemed to be a passionate supporter of public education. Talk to us about that.
Oh, yes. So if he reaches the state legislature in 1834, helps to pass the law that would create public education across the Commonwealth, the law that said that every township and borough in Pennsylvania would be a school district, and the residents would vote whether to create public schools and have some help from the state to get them started, was very popular with some people, not so popular with others. Some people said, these public schools were too expensive, teachers too highly paid, school taxes too high, you can imagine. And there was a concerted effort to repeal the school law the next year. The state Senate actually voted to repeal. The state House, depending on who you read, seemed just about to do the same thing. And then Thaddeus Stevens, is in his first term as a state legislator, stands up and he gives a two-hour speech that amazed people. People on the other side of the aisle, his opponents, said that they'd never heard so much passion and eloquence there at the state capitol in Harrisburg. As he was speaking, some of the state senators who had already voted for repeal drifted in and listened. And when he was done, the state House voted to keep the school law after all. The state Senate went back and took another vote and reversed course and decided to keep the law as well. And so public education would continue.
Wow. I mean, that's quite an accomplishment when you think of that and the kind of influence he had on the 13th Amendment. Let me read something that apparently his epitaph, he's in a cemetery in Lancaster, and it says... This is Thaddeus Stevens. I repose in this quiet and secluded spot, not from any natural preference for solitude, but finding other cemeteries limited by charter rules as to race. I have chosen this that I might illustrate in my death the principles which I advocated through a long life, equality of man before his creator. Very inspiring words coming from Thaddeus Stevens.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I like to tell people that... that Thaddeus Stevens and James Buchanan are both buried in Lancaster as far from each other as they can possibly be.
Did they know each other?
Well, they were contemporaries. They didn't exactly hang out together.
Right.
Thaddeus Stevens loved to refer to James Buchanan as one of my constituents, you know. I personally, playing Thaddeus Stevens, I had an opportunity now and then to go and visit Wheatland, James Buchanan's home in Lancaster. And there's a portrait of him hanging over the fireplace that I swear glares at me every time I come into the house as Thaddeus Stevens.
And we're almost out of time here, Steve, but it sounds like you enjoy playing this amazing character and real person, Thaddeus Stevens.
Oh, yeah. I do a variety of programs, but Thaddeus Stevens really speaks to me, and I love the fact the more I learn about him, the more there is to know. He had his finger in so many pies. We talk about his role with the 13th Amendment. He actually wrote the first draft of the 13th Amendment in addition to helping get it passed, helped to write and pass the 14th Amendment. He worked for women's rights as well, presented the first major petition for women's rights on the floor of the Congress. He represented the Cherokee Nation in front of the Supreme Court. This is an amazing, amazing man.
Well, I really appreciate you joining us today on Radio Time, Steve Anderson.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. And you can go to his website, greattaleslive.com, and find out more about Thaddeus Stevens and other characters he plays. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Fox Chase Cancer Center supports WHYY. 52 years ago, the Philadelphia chromosome was discovered in a Fox Chase laboratory. The Philadelphia chromosome was the first specific genetic abnormality linked to a specific cancer. Fast forward to today, and Fox Chase is offering a new diagnostic test for advanced cancers. Through next-generation DNA sequencing, tumor-specific genetic abnormalities now can be matched to precision drugs. More at foxchase.org. Fox Chase Cancer Center, now part of Temple Health.
I'm Jesse Thorne. In 1985, the band Till Tuesday had a hit video on MTV. Their singer, Amy Mann, had become kind of famous, but she was still broke, and she was weirded out by the attention.
You know, people following me back to my $400 a month apartment, I mean, I just found it threatening and creepy.
So she took her career another way. Singer-songwriter Amy Mann, this week on Bullseye from PRI.
Tomorrow night at 9 on WHYY.
3 years ago, a massive earthquake devastated Haiti. Charity workers and reporters came rushing in, but one writer says too many left as quickly as they came, sometimes after doing more harm than good. The author of Farewell Fred Voodoo, A Letter from Haiti, is with us to tell us more. That's next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. And if you've seen the recent film Lincoln, you, like us, may have walked away wanting to know more about it. The character played by Tommy Lee Jones, outspoken abolitionist Pennsylvania Representative Thaddeus Stevens. And that's our topic for today's Radio Times. Who was Thaddeus Stevens? And we have two more guests who have joined us. David O. Stewart is a lawyer turned writer, author of several books, including The Summer of 1787, The Men Who Invented the Constitution, Impeached, The Trial of President Andrew Johnson, and The Fight for Lincoln's Legacy, and American Emperor Aaron Burr's Challenge to Jefferson's America. David Stewart, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Great to be on the show.
And also with us is James Oakes. He's a professor of American history at the Graduate Center at CUNY. That's the City University of New York. He's got a brand new book called Freedom National, The Destruction of Slavery in the United States, 1861 to 1865. And I'll tell you the names of his other books, The Radical and the Republican, Frederick Douglass, Abraham Lincoln, The Triumph of Anti-Slavery Politics, Slavery and Freedom, An Interpretation of the Old South, and The Ruling Race, A History of American and slaveholders. And James Oakes, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
My pleasure.
And let me begin with you, James Oakes, if I could, and then David, I'll turn to you as well, and let's begin with the film. The same question I put to Steve Anderson. What do you make of Tommy Lee Jones' portrayal of Thaddeus Stevens, James?
Well, I'm pleased that it's a favorable portrayal. I too admire Thaddeus Stevens for many, many reasons. It's not the portrayal I would have chosen had I written the film, but it's a favorable portrayal, so I can't complain.
And have there been unfavorable portrayals of Thaddeus?
Oh, yes. There's a long history, and going all the way back to Birth of a Nation, the famous D.W. Griffith film from the 19-teens, in which a despicable, radical congressman, thinly veiled portrayal of Thaddeus Stevens is presented as the epitome of demonic fanaticism. Mm-hmm. And this, as historian Sean Wilentz has recently written, one of the good things about Lincoln is that it finally and irrevocably reverses that negative image that we've had of him.
Which is in part why we're doing this show. David, let me give you a chance to weigh in on the film and the portrayal of Thaddeus Stevens. What do you make of Tommy Lee Jones' portrayal?
Gee, I thought it was a hoot. I really was quite pleased, as Jim said, that we got Stevens out of the bad boy pen where he's nice. Resided in Hollywood for a long time. There's an astonishing portrayal by Lionel Barrymore in a terrible movie called Tennessee Johnson. And they're just, you know, he was larger than life in a lot of ways. I think Jones captured a lot of that. He had an outrageous sense of humor. He was extremely funny and had a very off-color jokes. And, you know, I think I felt like Jones caught a lot of that.
Well, and picking up on what you both said, and James, if I can go back to you, does that, though, then reflect perhaps a different view that we now have of slavery, of the Civil War, of the 13th Amendment,
yes.
even of Lincoln himself? Yes. They have been rehabilitated, perhaps.
I think so. Mostly rehabilitated, but yes, I think so. I think so. This is why my overall impression of the film is very, very favorable, precisely for that reason. It does present, it's very shrewd in the way it shifts our focus from the Emancipation Proclamation to the 13th Amendment, which I think took a kind of intelligence that you don't often see in Hollywood historical films, and I really appreciated that. And I think Lincoln deserves much of the credit that he's given in the film. I think Thaddeus Stevens deserves the accolades that the film is handing him, and I was pleased overall with it. As I said, it's not the same characterization I would have made, but it's favorable, and that's
a positive
thing.
I ran across a phrase, and let me toss this first to you, James, then to you, David, about Thaddeus Stevens, described as the most radical of radical Republicans. Does that fit perhaps your definition, James?
He was militant. I'm not sure the positions he took, the actual positions he took, were all that different from the standard anti-slavery arguments that most Republicans took. This is one of the... The difference between Stevens is that in the way he spoke, he was so sarcastic and so unrelenting, and he just wouldn't take anything from the Democrats, who are portrayed accurately in the film as the relentless opponents of emancipation. So it was the militancy more than the radicalism. The radicalism, I think, actually shows up more after the war. Hmm. And you get hints of that. I mean, that closing scene in the bedroom, when the woman beside him reads the second clause of the 13th Amendment, the enforcement clause, that Congress shall have the power to enforce emancipation by appropriate legislation, and you can't see her reading it. You're staring at Tommy Lee Jones' face, and his lips curl ever so slightly into a smile. He's going to be the enforcement agent for emancipation, and that's where you're going to see the real radicalism come out.
David, let me go back to you, and even going back to some of those scenes from the movie. And we're talking about a movie, and then we're talking about history here, but nonetheless, where I have to say our Congress looks more like the British Parliament than the Congress that we have today. Just how vigorous was the debating in Congress over the 13th Amendment?
It was vigorous, and you know that. The exchanges really were at a level that, you know, we like to talk about how bitter our politics are now, and we have to appreciate just how bitter they were then. And there was a ferocity to Stevens when he debated, which was terrifying to people. There was, it was known that if you took Stevens on the floor, you were probably going to end up looking like a fool, because he was so quick and cutting and would be totally, as Jim says, sarcastic and really contemptuous of the people who opposed him. And he would really just leave bruises that would last for months. And you even have to look in the contemporary newspapers to get the sense of that, because in the debates themselves, the official records, they sort of clean up some of that stuff. So Stevens really was an extraordinary, really, force of nature in the debates, and the debates were way more bare-knuckled than they are today.
And when you say
today we have empty chambers.
Yes, we do. But when you say bruises, David, are you talking about, you know, psychological or physical bruises?
No, just psychological.
I know things can get rough down there, but...
No, but there was violence, a lot of violence in Congress before the war, and you know we had not only fistfights but also attacks that left one senator in a coma.
Jim, you want to add something to that?
I would call them political bruises. That is, this is one of the ways in which I would have preferred to have the debates were ferocious, but they were also at a very high level. What you get in the movie, I think, is too much insult and not enough substance in the exchanges on the floor. Fernando Wood was indeed the evil genius, but he had serious constitutional arguments in addition to his racial demagoguery. And Thaddeus Stevens, this is one of the points I made in a piece I recently wrote, is that Thaddeus Stevens was the first congressman back in July of 1861 to explicitly lay out the war powers argument for emancipation. Right. So, you know, had it been me, I'd have given Thaddeus Stevens that war power speech that Lincoln delivers to his cabinet in 1865, because it was common to make that argument among anti-slavery people. But the first time I've ever seen it during the war was by Thaddeus Stevens. And indeed, after the war, Thaddeus Stevens gave an interview in which he claimed that at the beginning of the war, he used this argument, he explained this argument to Lincoln, and Lincoln claimed he didn't know anything about the laws of war. You know, so it's that there was more substance to what Thaddeus Stevens spoke, and the fear people had of him was as much a fear of the seriousness and the logic and the intellect behind the speeches as it was the sarcasm.
But if I might, Marty,
go ahead, David.
One further point. Along those lines, at the end of the war, Stevens very much, and you talk about his, you know, the final scene, he's going to be the enforcer. He very much, after the war, tried to push the country to do more for the freed slaves. And, you know, a huge example was he really actively promoted the notion that they would just the government should take all the land from the former slaveholders and give it to the slaves. Now, he didn't actually think that was going to happen, I don't think. But he was trying to push the conversation, and he had, when you call him the most radical of the radicals, that was his gift. He could make compromises. He made compromises all through his life. He was a savvy politician. His speech on the 14th Amendment is almost heartbreaking in the way he says, I had hoped for so much more, but we couldn't get it, and this is the best we can get. But he was this wonderful blend of someone who pushed things and took the outlier position to make people think about something in a new way, but also could make the deal.
And that's David O. Stewart. He's a lawyer turned writer, joining us today on Radio Times, along with Jim Oakes, who's a professor of American history at the Graduate Center at CUNY. And he's got a new book called Freedom National. And we invited both of them to join us today on Radio Times because of this character that truly lived here in Pennsylvania named Thaddeus Stevens. He was a member of the House of Representatives and pivotal in the creation and the existence of the 13th Amendment ending slavery in this country. Any questions or comments you might have, give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Jim, picking up on something that you said about Thaddeus Stevens talking about making a speech in 1861, and then of course we hear it from Lincoln in 1865. Are you saying that Thaddeus Stevens really influenced Abraham Lincoln in his thinking about the 13th Amendment and the Emancipation Proclamation, and then of course the ending of slavery?
It's not so much that he influenced him; it's just one of the things the movie seems to do to me is to make Lincoln the only person who knew how to make those kinds of political compromises. And as David indicated, Stevens was a brilliant politician who was among the radicals, the last one who needed a lecture in the basement kitchen from Lincoln about when to push and when to pull back. He knew exactly how to do that. He'd been doing that all his life, and he did it in Congress when it came to the various pieces of legislation that Congress had been passing since the special session in 1861. And it's not so much that Lincoln was influenced by Thaddeus Stevens so much as the positions that the movie attributes to Lincoln were common Republican positions, right? The war powers argument is a standard anti-slavery argument, and the Democrats objected to it. It's just that to have Lincoln explain it to his cabinet in 1865 strikes me as maybe necessary for the film, but hardly necessary for the cabinet.
Well, that's interesting. David, we also see in this film all the horse trading, the job giveaways, even perhaps even bribery to get this 13th Amendment passed. Does that reflect what really happened?
I'm not as expert on the 13th Amendment as Jim is, but I William Seward, just wonderfully portrayed in the movie, was a very experienced and supple politician from New York who had dealt in the dark arts of politics for a long time. And, in the book I did on the impeachment trial of Andrew Johnson, I became persuaded that Seward had a similar squad of fixers who came in and basically swayed votes through all sorts of nefarious means, and there is good evidence that it happened also for the 13th Amendment, and I thought it was great to get that out there. And also James Spader was brilliant in the performance.
They were having a lot of fun, those fixers or lobbyists. Jim, do you want to add to that?
Just to be the pedantic historian here, Spader's character was not in Washington. He was in New York, and the Seward lobby, as it's known, was focusing on getting lame duck Democrats from New York to change their votes. There is enough evidence that money was available for bribes. There's no evidence that it was ever actually paid out. The most important thing that the movie suggests that I would back away from is that Lincoln knew there were bribes being paid and approved of it. There is really no evidence for that whatsoever.
But should we be shocked that it took some arm twisting and perhaps some job giveaways, Jim Oakes, to get the 13th Amendment passed?
No. And here again, I don't think Thaddeus Stevens or Seward or any of those Republicans needed to be persuaded about this. There's a really terrific incident a couple of years earlier when Thaddeus Stevens is the floor. He's a brilliant parliamentarian, by the way. He was the floor manager for the Washington D.C. Emancipation Bill in the early 1862, and he knew the Democrats were going to raise a ruckus about it, so he reports it out of committee and allows for something like a minute of debate in the House. The Democrats go into an uproar about this, and he says, okay, I'll give you an hour, something like that. And so he ends up getting what he wanted, which was an hour, you know, by very skillfully manipulating the way he's pushing these things through the House. He did that in the state legislature in Pennsylvania. He knew how to play this game of politics very well, I think.
David,
he wasn't the only one, but
no,
he was particularly
indeed
adept at it.
And the fact that he headed up the Ways and Means Committee?
The Ways and Means Committee.
Which was, I'm assuming, has always been a very powerful position in Congress.
It certainly was then. He wanted to be on that committee because he represented, he was the owner of a miserably unproductive iron mill in Caledonia, Pennsylvania, and he wanted that position because he was a high tariff person. He wanted protective tariffs to protect the budding American iron industry. So that was particularly important to him. But he also used his position very effectively to steer the very difficult issues of financing the war through the 1860s.
David, let me ask you about his relationship with Lydia Smith. And again, we see this in the movie. Steve Anderson talked about it a bit. Do you see that? And we should say that she was African-American. Were they a couple from your research, your reading?
Well, it was a bold portrayal. And I have, my research is not dispositive one way or the other. There certainly were plenty of rumors and suspicions. I find the most telling piece of information for me was something from a biography done many years ago, and I think a fine one by Thorne Brody, a biography of Stevens, where she fastens on the fact that Thaddeus Stevens had a portrait painted of Lydia Hamilton Smith and hung in his house. And she says, you don't do that for a mere employee, no matter how competent. And I find that pretty persuasive, that there was indeed a deeper relationship. And, it's plausible to me that it was, in fact, a romantic relationship. But, the evidence is, that's the best evidence I've ever seen.
He also left her money in his will, as I understand it.
He did, but it was not such a staggering bequest that it was something you could have done for a loyal employee, in my view.
Well, let's take a very short break, and I'm sure, Jim, you want to add to that as well. We are talking about Thaddeus Stevens today on Radio Times. He is featured in the recent film Lincoln, which just got something like a dozen Oscar nominations this morning. And we're talking about who this man was, the important role that he played in the passage of the 13th Amendment. And he was a Pennsylvanian, was in the state legislature and in the U.S. Congress. Our guests are David O. Stewart and James Oakes, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. A little history lesson today on Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Kimmel Center supports WHYY and presents British Isles of Wonder, Friday, January 11th in Verizon Hall. Bagpipes ring through the Highland air, a call to arms or adventure. The spirited pipes, drums, and dancers of Scotland's Black Watch and the band of the Scots Guards join forces to celebrate the music and culture of England, Ireland, Scotland, and Wales. British Isles of Wonder, Friday, January 11th in Verizon Hall. Tickets available at KimmelCenter.org.
Barry Lopez is best known for writing about the natural world, but he goes deep into his own inner life in an essay about how he was abused by a pedophile over a period of 4 years and how that affected the course of his life. Lopez's essay about confronting the trauma of sexual abuse is in the January edition of Harper's. We'll talk with him on the next Fresh Air. This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. A reporter who was there describes surviving the earthquake in Haiti 3 years ago this week, but also tells us why all the help that came did not help. And the envelope, please, will look at the Oscar nominations. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. We're talking about Thaddeus Stevens with Jim Oakes and with David O. Stewart. Jim Oakes is professor of American history at the Graduate Center at CUNY. That's the City University of New York. He's written a number of books about American history and about the Civil War and slavery, including a new one called Freedom National, The Destruction of Slavery in the United States, 1861 to 1865. David O. Stewart is a lawyer turned writer. He's written a number of books about American history. In fact, has a forthcoming debut novel out later this year, I guess, called The Secrets of John Wilkes Booth Conspiracy, called The Lincoln Deception. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Jim, let me get you to weigh in on Lydia Smith and how you have come to understand her relationship with Thaddeus Stevens.
Well, I don't have much to add to what's been said. Nobody in the final analysis, nobody really knows whether the relationship was intimate. The Democrats from as far back as 1850 were making that accusation, but they made that accusation all the time, the demagogic racist argument that he had a black paramour that he was living with and that sort of thing. It was more than a housekeeper relationship, even with the expanded notion of what a housekeeper was. She was a widow. She had two children, and she brought them into that house, and he helped raise them. Then he took over, became a ward of his nephews when their father died, when their parents died, and she helped raise them. So it was a closer relationship than you would think by the term housekeeper, but whether it was intimate, no one really knows.
Yeah.
I would also say that for what it's worth, if you've ever seen a picture of Lydia Smith, she's very light-skinned, very fair-skinned. She has straight hair. She had African-American ancestry, but you'd have to be told that she had black ancestry to know that.
That's a very interesting. David, did you want to add to that?
I think Jim's caught it, and what we've said before pretty much well covers it.
Well, let's talk a bit about what it took to get this 13th Amendment passed, and Jim Oakes again, I guess, referring to the movie, but of course we want to make sure that there's some historical roots to this. Would it be fair, and if we're talking about Thaddeus Stevens, would it be fair to say that he pushed Lincoln on this issue, or that Lincoln was kind of following his own path and trajectory to come to this decision?
I wouldn't put it either of those two ways.
Okay. Well, how would you put it?
Well, for one thing, strictly speaking, presidents aren't involved in the amendment process.
Right.
And what Lincoln did in January of 1865 was in many ways anomalous. He rarely injected himself into the legislative process, in part because his fellow Republicans got very testy about it when he did so. But he, strictly speaking, had no constitutional role in the amendment process whatsoever. He didn't say a word about the amendment until after the Senate had approved it, and the majority of the Republicans, the Republican majority, had all but unanimously approved it in June of 1865. Shortly after that, the Republican Party endorsed it in its platform for 1864 when Lincoln was running for re-election. After that, he said, I support the 13th Amendment. Mm. There's no reason for him to have said anything before then. There was no idea of a 13th Amendment really until the end of 1863 when Congress came back into session after a year of the Emancipation Proclamation having been fully implemented, realizing in the wake of the Union victories at Vicksburg and Gettysburg the previous summer that the Union was likely to win the war without slavery having been fully destroyed by the emancipation process. And they spent the next several months trying desperately to figure out ways to legislatively accomplish what the Emancipation Proclamation by itself could not accomplish, and finally settled in around March of 64 on a 13th Amendment to the Constitution. The Senate approved that by the two-thirds majority that's necessary by virtue of the supermajority requirements of the amendment process. All it took for the opponents of the amendment, really the Democrats and border state people, to stop the amendment was one-third of the votes in either of the two houses. They didn't get it in they didn't stop it in the Senate because crucial unionists from Maryland and Missouri supported it. But they did stop it, and Fernando Wood, portrayed in the movie as the leader of the opposition, was indeed the leader of the opposition. And in early June of 1864, they did stop it. You know, the difference I have with the film, what the film suggests is that it was somehow lost by virtue of the disagreement among Republicans, that they had to get the radicals and the conservatives on board, united in opposition to the Democrats. But the truth is the Republicans were united from the first, from March of 1864 on it. There was one vote in the House against it by a Republican, and it was the person who sponsored the amendment to begin with. He's played in the movie. Congressman Ashley from Ohio. He's the only negative vote, and the reason it's a negative vote is because for parliamentary reasons, if you vote against something, you have the right to bring it back up, which is what he wanted to do. So he switched his vote, and you get a 79-1 vote among Republicans in favor of the amendment in 1864. That gives Ashley the right to bring it back up in December and January of 65, which is why you have another vote in the House. Lincoln involves himself in that process in part because the Republicans were unanimous, that all they were really going after were Democrats and border state congressmen. He wasn't trying to pull teeth among Republicans. He was trying to get those other few votes from outside.
David, you want to add to that? It's fascinating to think about, you know, what it took to get this passed and all the politicking that went on. You want to add to that?
Well, it seemed to me that the movie captures pretty accurately the crisis that we could have faced if you ended the war without something like that, and that's what the Republican leaders were dealing with. You know, what would the status be of the slaves and the freed slaves or the non-freed slaves? That something had to be done that would be terribly definitive. It could have been done by legislation, but doing it in theory, but that would have been probably unconstitutional or almost certainly. So you needed something like this. The movie goes a little off the deep end, it seemed to me, when tying it directly to the Confederate peace process. It made for a nice sort of narrative intertwining. I'm not sure there's tremendous evidence that one had a great deal to do with the other. They were just happening at the same time. But the key point was this: something had to be arranged before the end of the war, or the purpose of the war was going to sort of get all muddled. Mm. So I think that is an essential truth that the movie does capture and created this crisis atmosphere in Congress.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I had a question about whether there was a connection between this meeting with the Confederacy and the 13th Amendment. Jim Oakes, can you weigh in on that?
No, I agree with David. I think they're more coincidental than connected to one another. There is the connection in the sense that when it is true that some of the wavering Democrats, it wasn't in the movie, it's presented as though it's Blair and the conservative Republicans who need to be persuaded. But in fact, it's a question of making sure the Democrats who had been brought along, the lame duck Democrats whose votes had been changed or promised to change their votes, were worried that if there was a peace, if there was a serious peace proposal on the table, they wouldn't be able to continue supporting the 13th Amendment if that was an obstacle. And it is absolutely true that Lincoln sent a very misleading, deliberately misleading note to Congress.
Is that right?
Yes, that's true. He did send a note saying that he's the one who said stay out of the city, and he sent the note back to Congress saying there are no peace commissioners in the city, and to my knowledge, there will not be. They are not coming in. Will not be anytime soon. That was a piece of deliberate political, misinformation.
How crafty of him!
Well, he was a crafty politician.
Yes, he was.
Some people don't like him for it, but I admire that. I admire that in him.
I have to say, a caller called and just to correct me, saying Lydia Smith wasn't an African American, as I said, until of course the 13th Amendment. She was a free African. Am I wrong? And the caller right, Jim Oakes?
I'm not sure I understand what the distinction is.
Well, I guess I was making her an African-American, and I guess the question was she an American if she was, a free person living in Pennsylvania? I don't want to get too caught on semantics, but...
She was a free black woman, that's all.
Okay.
That's how I understand it.
Okay, fair enough. And again, if you want to give us...
She had not been a slave.
No. I think that's why I was probably being corrected there.
I see.
Happens from time to time on Radio Times. Okay. And we are talking about Thaddeus Stevens and talking with Jim Oakes and David O. Stewart. And again, taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We seem to be in sort of a, Lincoln time, and we're rediscovering the 16th president. And David O. Stewart, do you think there's too much reverence for Lincoln these days, or are we rediscovering the greatness of this president?
Well, there's just a power to his personal story and to his words and his life that are, all the stuff of myth. He comes from nothing. He has a very checkered political career, and then he achieves this extraordinary leadership in an extraordinary time, and he is a bold, courageous leader. He is in many ways the most, the national leader during the Civil War who most aggressively wants to pursue the war. And then he dies in this, tremendously dramatic way, which, prevents him from doing anything to foul his reputation. It's almost Hollywood-like, and it's got tremendous power. I think it was Tolstoy who said, during some 40 years later, we cannot yet know Lincoln's greatness. We're too close to him, and I almost feel like we still are. But I do think it is a risk that we ignore and neglect all the other people, because there were a lot of other people, and he wasn't the only person in the room. It's wonderful that today be able to have a chance to talk about Thaddeus Stevens, and the movie does portray Seward a bit. There were essential contributors. Lincoln had a terrible time during the war until he finally found a couple of generals who could win for him. Had he never found winning generals, we could have very different histories. So we have to guard against the notion that, he did it by himself. It's a balance. But the power of his story is, I don't think is ever going to be diminished.
What do you think, Jim Oakes?
No, I agree with that. I think I have no problem with, I'm a great admirer of Lincoln, and I have no problem with people who say that he was the greatest of our presidents. The problem is it really is very difficult to speak about him without going to extremes. Mm. So the mythology of Lincoln as someone who transcended the ordinary roles of politics in his greatness, that he was destined to be the man who freed the slaves all by himself with the stroke of his pen, has the inevitable tendency to give rise to a counter myth of Lincoln, the white supremacist whose Emancipation Proclamation didn't free a single slave. And it's very difficult, it's very difficult to take an accurate measure of him in between those two extremes as someone who was, who rose to the occasion, who grew in office, who was truly a great president, but who was, as David said, he was a member of a party that had taken control of Congress and was moving things along the same way that Lincoln was moving them along. You know, and Thaddeus Stevens was crucial to that process.
Well, and that was, and I wanted to toss that to you, David Stewart, about obviously the role, since we're talking about Thaddeus Stevens, the role that abolitionists, including Thaddeus Stevens, played in helping to pass in the 13th Amendment and end slavery.
Well, what Stevens understood and terribly well was the balance between being the provocateur, being the person who goads the society at large and his opponents and his own allies into looking at the problem anew, into taking the stronger, more daring position, but then realizing, okay, I can't get them to move all the way, so this is what I can get. Mm. And he was able to do that. It's an extraordinary gift that he did have. And in many ways, the 13th Amendment, because of its mere simplicity, which is we shall not have slaves, almost didn't highlight it as much as you see later on in the 14th Amendment, just a couple of years later, where he's balancing all sorts of things. But it was a true tightrope act that he was, you know, just wonderfully good at, and made a huge difference at that moment in time.
Well, we could go on and talk more about Lincoln and Thaddeus Stevens. We do have to end our conversation, and my thanks to both of you. David O. Stewart, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
My great pleasure.
And James Oakes, thank you very much as well.
My pleasure.
And Jim Oakes, professor of American history at the Graduate Center at CUNY, that's the City University of New York. He's got a brand new book called Freedom National, The Destruction of Slavery in the United States, 1861 to 1865. And David O. Stewart, the author of a number of books, has a forthcoming debut novel out later this year on the secrets of the John Wilkes Booth conspiracy, and that is called The Lincoln Deception. And we began our conversation with Steve Anderson, actor and storyteller who has performed and interpreted Thaddeus Stevens at venues across this state. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes and you can find out more about this program. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of the show, produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thank you so much for joining us.